Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Martel. Reading Martin Connor's Beast of Vengeance by Jeffrey Farnham. Chapter 15. How I Fell In with My Friend, Captain Sir Adam Penfeather. It was the pommel of the long rapier, dangling from the chair back, that first drew and held my eye. For this pommel was extremely bright, and polished, and gleamed on me like a very keen and watchful eye, as I watched, though conscious also of the luxury of panelled walls, of rich floor coverings, and tapestried hangings, and the man who sat writing so studiously at the carven table, and presently roused by the scratch of his industrious quill, I fell to watching him, his bowed head, the curve of his back as he stooped, a small, lean man, but very magnificent, for his coat of rich purple velvet sat on him with scarce a wrinkle. His great peruke fell in such ample profusion of curls that I could see naught but the tip of his nose as he bent to his writing, and I wondered idly at his so great industry. Now, presently, he paused to read over what he had written, and doing so, began to push and pull at his cumbrous wig, and finally, lifting it off, laid it on the table. Thus I saw the man was white-haired, and that his ears were mighty strange, being cut and trimmed to points, like a dog's ears, and beholding the jut of brow and nose and resolute chin, I felt a sudden trembling, and striving to lift myself on the bed, wondered to find this such a business. "Adam," said I, my voice strangely thin and far away, "Adam Penfeather." In one movement, as it seemed to me, he was out of the chair and leaning above me. "Why, Martin," he said, "why, comrade, Lord love you, Martin, are you awake at last? Here you've lain these 12 hours like a dead man, and small wonder what with your wound." "So you've come at last, Adam, and in good time, shipmate." "Where am I?" "Safe aboard my ship, the Deliverance. 'Twas you fought the Happy Dispatch. I, Martin, and should have very properly destroyed every rogue aboard but for my lady." "My lady?" said I, sitting up. "My lady Joan?"
"Aye, verily."
"Then 'tis true, all true," said I, and fell a trembling. "My lady's here."
"She is, Martin, and more's the pity, for look'ee, having boarded yon devil's craft and cut down such as resisted, I was very properly for hanging such as remained, when down on me comes my lady and is for carrying the rogues to trial, the which is but vain labor and loss of time, since each and all of my 23 prisoners is bound to swing soon or late, as I told her. But no matter, Sir Adam," says she. "Law is law, Sir Adam," quoth she. "When cometh God be running to say the cursed ship was afire, and coming to the main hatchway, I beheld half strangled in the smoke yourself, shipmate, and a woman in your arms." "Ah, 'twas Joanna," said I, leaping in the bed. "What of her, Adam? What of her, man?" "A fine woman, I'll allow, Martin, and by her looks a lady of quality. Say a demon, rather, a very she-devil." "Why, as you will, Martin, as you will," said he. "Only rest you, lest the fever take you again." "How was I wounded, then?" "A flying splinter in the head, Martin, so Surgeon Penroddock says, but then you have a marvelous stout skull, as I do know, shipmate."
"What have you done with Joanna? Where is she?"
"Content you, Martin. She is safe enough and well cared for. You shall see her anon," said he, stroking his long chin and viewing me with his quick, keen eyes. "But first you shall eat."
and he rang the small silver bell that stood upon the table, whereon in came a soft-footed serving-man in handsome livery, who, receiving Adam's commands, presently bowed himself out again. Hereupon Adam set on his sparrow wig, and fell to pacing slowly to and fro, his feet soundless upon the rich carpet, viewing me now and then like one that ponders some problem. Now, beholding his air of latent power and indomitable mastery, the richness of his habit, the luxury that surrounded him, it seemed in very truth that he was the great gentleman, and I the merest poor suppliant for his bounty. Whereupon I must needs contrast his case with mine, and perceiving myself no better than I had been 3 weary years since, to wit, the same poor destitute wretch, I fell into a black and sullen humor. "You go vastly fine these days," quoth I, scowling like the surly dog I was. "Ay, Martin, I am so vastly rich," he sighed. "I'm a baronet, shipmate," he nodded dolefully, "and what is worse, I own many rich manors, and countless broad acres besides, divers castles, mansions, houses, and the like. Thus all men do protest friendship for me, and at this moment there be many noble ladies do sigh for me, or the manors and castles aforesaid. And there was a duchess, Martin, was set upon wedding my riches and me along of them. But I have no leaning to duchesses, though this one was young and comely enough. So I went to the king, who by his grace suffered me to fit out, provision, arm, and man this ship at my own expense, Martin, and square away for the Spanish main to sink, burn, and utterly destroy such pirate vessels as I can bring to action. So here am I, shipmate, since I had rather fight rogues when and where I may than marry a duchess once. And here cometh what shall do you a world of good, Martin, broth with a dash of rum, which is good for a man, soul and body," said he, as the serving fellow appeared, bearing a silver tray, whereon stood broth in a silver bowl of most delectable odor. And indeed, very good broth I found it. So whiles I ate, Adam, sitting near, told me much of his doings, since he left me solitary on Bartlemy's Island. But of my lady Joan Brandon, he spoke no word. "'Tis but 3 short years since we parted, shipmate, 3 short years." "3 long empty years," said I bitterly. "Ah, truth," quoth he, "you had a mind to naught but vengeance, which is an empty thing, as belike you'll allow, Martin, you now being 3 long empty years the wiser." Here, what with the hot broth and my hotter anger, I came nigh to choking. Whereupon he rose, and seeing the bowl empty, took it from me, and thereafter set another pillow to my back, the while I reviled him impotently. "There, there, Martin," said he, patting my shoulder as if I had been a petulant child. "Never miscall, Adam, that is your friend, for if you have wasted yourself in a vanity, so have I. For here you see me full of honors, Martin, a justice, a member of Parliament, a power at court, with great lords eager for my friendship and great ladies eager to wed me. Yet here am I, safe at sea and fighting rogues as often as I may, for great riches is a plague that tainteth love and friendship alike. Vanitas vanitum, omnium vanitas. Yet your 3 years have been turned to better account than mine," said I, grown suddenly humble. "In the matter of houses and land, Martin?" "Aye," I nodded, "for my 3 years I have not to show but scars and rags." "Not so, Martin, for your fortune marched with mine. Lord love you, I never bought stick or stone or acre of land, but I bought one for you, comrade. Share and share, shipmate.
So, if I am a man of great possessions, so are you, Martin. There be lands and houses in old England, waiting their master as you sit there.
Now at this I lay silent a while, but at last I reached out a fumbling hand, the which he took and wrung in his vital clasp.
God help me, Adam, said I, what have these years made of me?
That same scowling, unlovely, honest-hearted self-deluder that is my sworn comrade and blood-brother, and that I do love heartily for his own sake, and the sake of my Lady Joan, for look ye, she hath oft told me of you and the life you lived together on Bartlemy's Island.
And has she so indeed, quoth I.
Aye, verily. Lord Martin, when she waked from her swoon aboard ship and found I'd sailed without you, she was like one distraught and was for having me bout ship that she might stay to comfort you in your solitude. And so I did, Martin. But we were beset by storm and tempest and blown far out of our course, and further beset by pirates and the like evils, and in the end came hardly to England with our lives. No sooner there than my lady fits out an expedition to your relief, and I, busied with divers weighty concerns, she sails without me, and is wrecked in the Downs, whereby she lost her ship and therewith all she possessed, saving only Coningsby Sheen, which she holdeth in your name, Martin.
Adam, said I, oh, Adam, surely this world hath not her like.
Assuredly not, quoth he. Though it doth put me to great wonder, you should come to forget her a while.
Forget her, I? Aye, Martin, in the matter of the lady yonder, Madame Joanna.
Joanna, I cried, clenching my fist, that demon?
Ah, demon is it, quoth Adam, pinching his chin and eyeing me askance.
Doth your love grow all sudden cold?
Love? Cried I.
Nay, my hate waxeth for things so evil, she is the very devil.
Nay, Martin,
she is a poor Spanish lady, exceeding comely, and with a hand, a foot, an eye, a person of birth and breeding, a dainty lady indeed, yet of marvellous sweet conversation and gentle deportment, and worthy any man's love, I do allow.
"Man," cried I, "you do speak errant folly. She is Joanna."
"Why, true, Martin, true," said Adam soothingly and eyeing me anxious-eyed. "She is the Lady Joanna that you preserve from death and worse, it seems."
"Says she so, Adam?"
"Aye, and by her showing some few small kindnesses have passed betwixt you."
"Kindnesses?" I demanded.
"Aye, Martin, as is but natural, God knoweth. Kisses, d'ye see, embraces."
"She lies," quoth I, starting up in bed. "She lies."
"Ah, very well, Martin."
"Ha! Did you doubt my word, Adam?"
"No, Martin, no, except when I first clapped eyes on you, she chanced to be lying in your arms, do you see?"
"Tush," said I, "what of that? 'Twas after she'd set the ship afire and sought to murder Don Frederigo. We left her in the 'tween decks, and I found her nigh stifled by the smoke. Have you got her fast in the bilbo, safe under lock and key?"
"Lord love you, no!
Martin," said he, viewing me askance as if I were raving. "So young, Martin, and a bullet wound on the arm, and mighty brave, despite her tenderness. So says Penruddock, our surgeon."
"Why, then, in God's name, where is she?"
"Where she should be, seeing that she was wounded and solitary, but with my Lady Joan."
"God forbid!" cried I.
"Why, Martin, 'tis my lady's whim. They walk together, talk, eat, aye, and sleep together, for aught I know."
"Adam," said I, grasping him by the arm, "you know Captain Tressady of old. and Mings and Red Rory, Saul Aiken, and others of the Coast Brotherhood, but have you ever met the fiercest, bravest, greatest of these rogues? Have you ever heard tell of Captain Joe?
Ah, truly, Martin, some young spring gull that hath risen among em since my time, a bloody rogue by account, and one I would fain come alongside of.
Captain Joe lies in your power, Adam. Captain Joe is aboard. Captain Joe is Joanna herself. 'Twas Joanna fought the Happy Dispatch so desperately.
Now hereupon Adam fell back a pace and stood staring down on me and pinching his chin, but with never a word. And seeing him thus incredulous still, I strove to get me out of bed.
"Easy, Martin," said he, restraining me. "These be wild and whirling words, and something hard to believe."
"Why then, if you doubt me still, summon hither Don Federigo, an he be yet alive."
"Look now, Martin," said he, seating himself on the bed beside me. "Since we left England, I have burned or scuttled 4 rascally pirate craft, and each and every a fighting ship, yet no one of them so mauled and battered us as this Happy Dispatch, whereby I have lost 14 good fellows dead, besides 30 wounded, the which, as I do know, was captained by one calling himself Belvedere."
"Tush," cried I, "he was a man of straw, and would have run or struck to you after your first broadside. 'Twas Joanna and Resolution Day fought the ship after Belvedere was dead."
"Ah, dead, is he? Why, very good," said Adam, rising and seating himself at the table. "Here is yet another name for my journal. You saw him dead, Martin?" he questioned, taking up his pen.
"Most horribly. He was killed by the mate, Resolution Day."
"Ha," says Adam, turning to his writing, "'tis a name sticks in my memory. A man I took out of prison and saved from burning, along with divers others, when we took Margarita. A tall, one-eyed man, and scarred by the torment. 'Tis the same. But God forgive you, Adam, why must you be wasting time over your cursed journal and idle talk? I think, Martin, I meditate, for if this be true, indeed, we must go like agog."
"Delicately, Martin, delicately."
"Folly, oh, folly," cried I. "Joanna may be firing the ship as you sit scribbling there, or contriving some harm to my dear lady. Act, man, act."
"As how, Martin?" he questioned, carefully sanding what he had writ.
"Seize her ere she can strike. Set her fast under lock and key. Have her watched continually."
Said Adam, pinching his chin and viewing me with his keen gaze. "If she be so dangerous as you say, well, why not slay her out of hand?"
"No," said I, "no."
"But she is a pirate, you tell me."
"She is, and I do know her for murderess beside."
"How came you in her company, Martin?"
Hereupon, in feverish haste, I recounted much of what I have already set down concerning this strange wild creature, to all of which he hearkened mighty attentive, pinching at his chin and a frown on his face.
"Verily," said he when I had done, "never heard man stranger story."
But seeing how he regarded me in the same dubious manner, I leapt out of bed ere he might prevent, and staggered with weakness.
"Lord love you, Martin," said he, snatching me in his iron grip. "Lord love you, what would you be at? Now here's Surgeon Penruddock and his 2 mates with their hands full enough as it is, God knoweth, and you sick of your wound?"
So saying, Adam bundled me back into bed willy-nilly.
"Oh, I then question Don Federigo, who knoweth her better than I. Summon him hither."
"Impossible, Martin, he lieth very nigh to death."
"And what of Joanna? She is as swift as a snake and as deadly. She is a lurking danger, a constant menace, beyond thought subtle and crafty.
"Hist!"
quoth Adam, catching me by the arm and turning suddenly, as came a soft rapping. Then the door opened and Joanna herself stood before us. But indeed a Joanna, such as I had never seen. Timid, abashed, great-eyed, and wistful, she stood looking on me, her slender hands tight clasped, her tremulous, parted lips more vivid by reason of the pallor of her cheeks, all shy and tender womanhood, from the glossy ringlets at her white brow to the dainty shoe that peeped forth of her petticoat. As for me, I sank back among my pillows, amazed beyond all speech by the infinite change in her, for here was a transformation that went beyond mere lace and velvets. The change was in her very self, her look, her voice, her every gesture.
"Martino mio," said she at last, "and sure this pen of mine may never tell all the languorous caress of these two words." And then, or ever I might speak or stir, she was beside me and had caught my hand to her lips. And then I saw Joan standing in the doorway, the Damaris of my dreams, and though her lips smiled upon us, there was that in her eyes that filled me with bitter shame and an agony beyond the telling. "Damaris!" I groaned and freed my hand so suddenly that Joanna stumbled and would have fallen but for Adam's ready arm. "Damaris!" I cried. "Oh, God, look not so! All these weary years I have lived and dreamed but of you. Joan, beloved, 'twas thy sweet memory made my solitude worth the living. Without thee I had died." Choking with my grief, I reached out my hands in passionate supplication to that love shape that drooped in the doorway, one white hand against the carven paneling. And then Joanna was on her knees, her soft cheek pressed to my quivering fist, wetting it with her tears.
"Martino," she sobbed. "Oh, caro mio, art so strange. Dost not know thy Joanna? Dost not know me, Martino?"
"Aye, I know you, Captain Joe," I cried. "Well, I know you to my cost, as hath many another. I know you for La Culebra, for Joanna that is worshipped, obeyed, and followed by every pirate rogue along the main. Oh, truly, I know you to my bitter sorrow."
Now at this she gave a little pitiful, helpless gesture, and looked from me to the others, her eyes aswim with tears.
"Alas," she sobbed, "and is he yet so direly sick?"
Then bowing her head to the pillow beside me,
"Oh, beloved Martino," she sighed, "art so sick not to remember all that is betwixt us, that which doth make thee mine for so long as life shall be to me? The wonder I have told to my Lady Damaris."
Now here I caught her in savage grip. "What?" cried I, shaking her to and fro despite my weakness. "What have you told my lady?"
"Beloved Martino, I confessed our love. Alas, was I wrong, Martino? I told her my joyous hope to be the mother of your child ere long."
"Oh, shame!" cried I. "Oh, accursed liar!"
And I hurled her from me, then lying gasping amid my tumbled pillows, my aching head between my hands, I saw my beloved lady stoop to lift her, saw that lying head pillowed on Joan's pure bosom, and uttering a great cry, I sank to a merciful unconsciousness. Join me next time for another exciting chapter of Martin Conisbee's Vengeance by Geoffrey Farnall, here on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.